Thank you, Tina, and good afternoon, everyone. I'm Kevin Harkins. This week on Sunday Special, we have what I believe is not only a very interesting but extremely important program. On Friday evening, January 22nd, the Norwich Free Academy hosted a program in its ongoing three-year series of events and curriculum surrounding the 50th anniversary of the Vietnam War. At the center of the evening's agenda was author, correspondent, and world-renowned journalist Michael Putzel, whose book, The Price They Paid, The Enduring Wounds of War, was published in 2015. Michael Putzel was a war correspondent for the Associated Press. In 1971, his home office was in Saigon, South Vietnam. As part of his assignment, he flew with C Troop, 2nd/17th Cavalry, 101st Airborne Division, about 350 men who called themselves the Condors. Years later, he would track down the men to find out what had become of them. He found the warriors deeply affected by their combat experience, some still struggling physically, as well as with the less visible wounds of war. He would spend the next 7 years working on what has become a widely acclaimed book that handles the subject of the Vietnam War with a candor rarely heard in press reports of the day, or since for that matter. For then and even today, the media at large seems to regard the Vietnam War with a hands-off, let's not go there, tell it like it is only when it's convenient approach. During Friday night's program, Putzel spoke about the book, why he wrote it, how he came to learn about Norwich Free Academy graduate Bobby Howard, who was killed in the Oshawa Valley in 1969 in combat, and how he would ultimately come face to face with Bobby Howard's son, Robert Howard Jr., how that meeting added another dimension to the book, and how The Price They Paid, The Enduring Wounds of War, include an important piece of Norwich, Connecticut's history. So this week on our program, we are going to let you listen, unedited, to the events of Friday night. An interesting evening indeed, because originally there was to be a book signing and a speech given by Mr. Putzel on Saturday morning at the Slater Auditorium and Atrium on the NFA campus. But along came the East Coast blizzard, so NFA, and I might say they did a stellar job of coordinating everything, compacted all the scheduled events into one evening. An evening that started at 6 p.m. in the Skybox Dance Studio, overlooking the Norton Gymnasium, where NFA would take on Lyman in a boys' varsity basketball game an hour later. During the 6 o'clock program, we heard from, and you're going to hear, among others, the voices of Norwich Free Academy's Director of Student Affairs, John Iovino, Director of the School's History Department, Karen Cook, Norwich Mayor Deb Hinchey, Connecticut State Senators Kathy Austin and Kevin Ryan, local veteran Tom Burke, and Michael Putzel himself. Then we'll take you downstairs to the floor of the Norton Gymnasium for the halftime ceremonies during the basketball game, when, unbeknownst to Robert Howard Jr., the Connecticut Chapter of Honor and Remember would present him and his family with a commemorative flag honoring his father and the enduring wounds of war which his family suffers to this day. Finally, as the snow began to fall over Norwich the next morning, I'll sit down with the author himself, Michael Putzel, to talk about the author and the book, and how The Price They Paid, The Enduring Wounds of War, has affected him. I'd like to caution our listeners that the first portion of the program does contain some frank language, but in retrospect, maybe it's about time somebody did speak frankly about Vietnam. I also want to express my heartfelt appreciation to the Student Affairs and Communications Departments of Norwich Free Academy for not only making these events possible, but for treating the subject matter with distinction while showing every courtesy and accommodation to those of us in the media. And now, from the campus of Norwich Free Academy, The Price They Paid, The Enduring Wounds of War.
Tonight we're combining tomorrow's event and this evening's event into one, and it'll be fine. So the format will be, our speaking program is intact. We'll have that up here very shortly. After the speaking program, our author, Michael, will be downstairs beginning his book signing. At the varsity game, will be about 7 o'clock. At halftime, we all want to be down on the court. Now, during the varsity game, you have your choice. and they stand there in the skybox, or there's a roped-off section on the court. Whatever is comfortable for you, feel free to do that. But at halftime, we are going to bring everyone downstairs for a special presentation. And Michael will be signing books again after the game as well. So I say welcome. Thank you for being here. It's a pleasure to have you here. And I'm going to turn over to Karen Cook, the head of the History Department at Ocean Academy, who will be your MC. Karen, thank you.
No, but you're not, John.
We sought to undertake this project mostly to honor those who served, and also as a school to understand this conflict and the role it plays in our nation's history. And I think the event we have tonight really helps us to do both of those things. And we certainly couldn't have this event without your presence. Thank you so much. I'd like to welcome, with a special greeting, our head of school, Mr. David Klein.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for being here. Let's just have just a round of applause for Karen and the members of her department. This is coming from the heart at Norwich Academy, and it's great that you're with us. It's great that you can assist us as we teach our students about the importance of your service. A nice round of applause for that. So I'd like to welcome you to Norwich Academy. Those of you that have attended two of our prior events, we thank you for coming back. It's always nice to see you. And those of you that are first-time attendees at these events or haven't been back to campus for a long time, if you're an alum, we are honored and proud that you joined us, and we look forward to spending some time with you tonight. Also, to all of our service personnel and your families, we thank you for your service. We know how important it is, and we know the sacrifice you made, and it gives us great comfort to spend some time with you tonight. So once again, thank you for coming, and I look forward to chatting with you.
Your father's death. I am writing as both a personal friend of your father's and as his troop commander, because I want you to know what a very special kind of man your father was, and how great was his loss to me and to his many friends. And he goes on to talk about more of Robert's father. But I thought his last paragraph was very telling, and I think it speaks to what so many of you have thought about. I know that the sense of loss over your father's death is very great to you, but is also shared by each member of our troop, who will always remember him as a happy and wonderful man. I hope that is the way you will remember him always. Sincerely, the commanding officer. And when I read this chapter, there are two chapters in the book, I thought the death of a father is always life-changing. My own father, his father, was killed in an automobile accident when he was about a year old. He never knew his father. And he always talked. He recently passed away himself at age 84. And he always talked about that loss and not knowing who he was. Robert Sr.'s life was ended during a war that brought many of us to a reality that we were ill-equipped to understand. Yet not. Who among us can truly understand what those words have meant to the lives of so many? Michael Putzel has written an amazing book that describes the price they in the war paid. His two chapters that speak to Robert Howard, both senior and the second, are beautifully written, chillingly moving, and thought-provoking. It is not only the soldiers who worked this war that were affected. Michael has opened the window to the lives of the families of these soldiers. We are able, through his writing, to view those forever changed. He has given us an inside view into the battlegrounds of this war. More importantly, he has provided us with a pathway for understanding how long-reaching generations and years the effects of this war have been. It is with great honor that I address all of you, and I thank you for the book that you have written. And I thank you and your mother for coming to my office and bringing this to me. Thank you very much.
Gave me the best experiences of my life. Taught
with the freedoms that we have. I think that having that knowledge framed the rest of my life, because without going someplace, seeing what I was in Japan, I served overseas in Japan, and so I was never in Vietnam. I never had to pay that sacrifice of seeing my colleagues not make it home. That is something that I never had to do, but I know that those that were in Vietnam, in country itself, whether they paid that ultimate sacrifice over there, had experiences that provided freedom for us here today. And without having them there, we would not be as free as we are. And we're darn lucky in this country for having the regular people that go into the service and service and provide that for us, because the one piece about freedom is it's really not free. Just really not free. I have a couple of presentations here, but I'll let my colleagues speak for a bit.
Thank you. It's certainly an honor for me to be here this evening. The Vietnam War obviously has a real relevance in my life and my family's life. I had a brother who went to Vietnam and was injured twice. The second time he was injured, he came back with brain injuries that required him to be cared for until the end of his life about 2 years ago. So this is really, really very relevant to me, and I look forward to reading about it and hearing about other people's experiences in this war. It is a devastating experience. While my brother came back, he did leave his children without a father and family. And then that affected their lives, as we've seen, not my own birth and my own family. So it is an important element. Kathy talked about the fact that these men and women weren't as respected as they should have been when they returned. I think my brother was fortunate because he never had that kind of adverse experience because of the condition he came back from. And when I hear about this, I realize he made an incredible sacrifice, and I'm just glad that at this point in time we've come to realize the kind of sacrifices that the men, women, and their families made during the Vietnam War. We acknowledge it, and we now thank them for that service. Maybe it's too late, but it's still done in an appropriate time. I wish it was done more appropriately. But we do appreciate the service of 50 years ago in this war that gave us the kind of freedom that Kathy talked about that we still reserve for ourselves today and appreciate today. So thank you, and thanks for having me this evening.
Stuff here.
You may. Because you'll probably be talking a little bit too, but we have a couple of things for you.
I'll read this one. The State of Connecticut General Assembly's official citation has been introduced by the Senator, myself, Representative Dubinsky, and Representative Riley. Be it hereby known to all of the Connecticut General Assembly, hereby offers its sincerest congratulations to Michael Putzel in recognition of the price they paid enduring wounds of war, a story of a legendary helicopter commander in Vietnam, and the flight crews in the most intensive helicopter war ever. Chapter The First Condor tells the story of Bill and the regret to inform letter he wrote to a 4-year-old toddler. When his dad, Robert L. Howard, was KIA in Oshawa on June 10, 1969, Robert Howard was an outstanding NFA athlete. His name appears in the Vietnam monument. The entire membership extends its very best wishes on this memorable occasion. Given this 22nd day of January 2016 at the State Capitol, signed by the President of the Senate, Martin Looney, Speaker of the House, Brendan Shockey, and the Secretary of State.
Robert Howard's courageous efforts during the Vietnam War. The He applauds your many accomplishments and wishes you continued success in your future endeavors. Therefore, Daniel P. Malloy, Governor of the State of Connecticut, hereby conveys, officially conveys, honor and recognition upon Michael Pencil of the State of Connecticut. Thank you.
They finally started showing all the areas that they sprayed. So you all been called the same thing I was: baby killers, drug addicts, war criminals, treated like shit. And now we get around to Empire Patriot Guard. And more than happened one time with Vietnam veterans, this shit is not going to happen no more. Not to the kids that follow us. We treat them with respect. We stand at their funerals. We don't fight anybody. And yet people still spit on uniforms. You see it every day. You treat them like shit. Yet you were and are America's best that they had. We want to leave a way so that people will know who you are. Not everybody that's on the wall. You go down and by the men's statue, there's a little small, dinky-ass plaque. And it says, to all those that died not as a direct result of the war. So I ask, so if that's 59,000 over there on the wall, is this a million? How many thousands and hundreds of thousands of people that'll never be on any wall, that nobody will remember their names, how many of them died of Agent Orange? I ask you, if you're a Vietnam veteran, when you got out, you got discharge papers. That tells me what you belonged to when you were there. If it's a Marine, like my brother, what regiment, what battalion, what Marine division? If it's the Army, what company, what regiment, what division, and what your MOS was, and when you were there? I will gladly put them on the memorials and then give you copies of it so that you can give them to the kids and grandchildren, and if you get my age, your great, great, great grandchildren. But please, leave a record of who are you, what you did for your country. And even though they are finally getting around to us, how many have already died? And yet you didn't get to them in time. My brother died 2 years ago. He did two tours in the Marines. 3rd Battalion, 5th Marines, and 1st Battalion, 9th Marines, the Walking Dead. The group gets smaller. Please, please, leave a record of who you are and what you did. So that some generation, some days, when nobody has to go to war again, they'll remember who were we, what we did. We're all human beings. We were all taught a long time ago what patriotism was. The bullshit about everybody being drafted is crock. 70% were volunteers. I volunteered to stay 14 more months so I could go see. And my first day there, when I come to land and the damn thing, the place is on fire, I'm wondering, oh boy, did you make a mistake here? And the best day I ever had is when it took off to fly back home. But we all know people that didn't make it. All of us do. If you want to help me remember those, you can remember the names when you give me a discharge to put you on the memorials. Tell me which ones, and I can look. My saddest stories is watching Navy Corpsman, the best thing that ever happened to the Marine Corps, out of the Navy nurses. But reading the stories about Corpsman, the Corpsman goes up, pulls a Marine, and the Marine says, "You're crazy. That's why I get the extra pay." He goes out to get another one. Neither one comes back. Another one is Chief Hospital Corpsman. He's only got a few days to go. They got a medevac run. He said, "I'll go. I only got a couple of days to go." Nobody in the helicopter came back. We lose too many. My friend Frank, he lost his son in Afghanistan. We pay a hell of a price for what we have. 1% of this country serves, and 99% bellyache, moan, groan, and complain about it. But the 1% are the ones that don't have a college degree. They got a DD 214. You can't get that in college, but you can damn sure get it on a battlefield. I have a piece of paper that says I was there. Whether you want to believe me or not, I can talk to the ones from Vietnam, and we can spot because we know what we're talking about. A man lost his dad. I put him on the Army Memorial because I want you to see in a picture of what you look like in uniform, or utilities, or fatigues, or whatever you want. But please leave a record of who were you. I will gladly do it. Thank you.
I served the United States Army. I was in Chu Lai, Vietnam, the AmeriCal Division. When 1967 to 1968. Fortunately, I came home whole, except for feelings of guilt that many of us who came home have today. Robert Howard's father was a good friend of mine. Yes, he was a star athlete. He had a great nickname. Probably only Mr. Crawford and I remember his nickname was Papaloo. What Karen's done in celebration of the 50th anniversary, along with your committees, is greatly appreciated by the entire community here in Norwich. It's been a great undertaking by the school, and the support of the school, and I personally thank you for doing that. You are a distinguished author. I had no idea who Mr. Putzer was, and then one day I was on the internet and I came across his book that he had published. And I downloaded it onto my e-reader, and while on vacation I decided to tackle it. I've read many books on Vietnam, many of them that involved politics, and we know what that encompassed. From the beginning of your book, Michael, I couldn't put it down. It touched me because it was personal. It touched me because you were telling the truth as a war correspondent with the Associated Press. Not only were you in Da Nang, in nice restaurants, but you're also out on the battlefield, especially that of Hamburg Hill. Your research in finding young Robert Howard is a mission that many people would not undertake. If you strive to find him, to get the story, and that is appreciated by him, his family, and those who know his father. Thank you. When you wrote in your book, The Price They Paid, is very personal in that what happened to those who did come back? The commander who left his wife, his two teenage sons, and just left, who wound up selling cars the rest of his life, wound up getting remarried, and was arrested for all sorts of accusations, bigotry, and things like this. But those are the effects of the war that entered into this individual's mind. He was a wonderful leader. He was a great, great commander. His motto was, "No soldier left behind," and he lived by that. Yet, what was in his mind when he came home, he couldn't control, and it overtook him. I thoroughly enjoyed your book. I congratulate you for telling the real story, a heartening story, and none of the masks that are put on in other books. 15 years ago, after one of my visits to the Vietnam Wall of Washington, D.C., I came home and started researching people from Norwich, Connecticut. And I was amazed that there were 12 young men from Norwich, Connecticut who were killed in Vietnam. The majority of them graduated from this school, Norwich Free Academy. And it was at that time that I had the honor of being the chairman of the Norwich Vietnam Memorial Committee, and with the help of Captain John Carter, his father, Colonel Arthur Carter, retired, Dick Fredericks, Vice President of Eastern Savings Bank, and Robert Richardson, I thought it was only proper that there be a memorial across the street on the war triangle. Yeah. On that day, we had 500 people here. The streets were closed, and it was wonderful. That they'd always be remembered with their names engraved in their hometown. There was no city funds, no municipal funds. But over $40,000 was raised within 6 months for that memorial. It stands proudly, will never go away, and be part of
history here in Orange. The 12 men on that wall and the over 58,000 men on the wall in Washington, D.C., I only know about the 12 who were here. I don't know about the other ones. I don't know what would have become of their lives. I don't know if they would have gone on to greater things. But there's one thing that I do know about each and every one of them who did not return from Vietnam. That none of them went to Canada. None of them came back from Canada being granted full amnesty by President Jimmy Carter with no service to veterans' hospitals, no service to veterans' organizations, nothing. How sad to think the families of those who lost theirs when they faced those who came from Canada. Very sad tale. I hope my children, my grandchildren, never go through what we all went through. And I thank you for being here so much. Thank you very much.
There are a lot of seats over here on this side if you'd like to take a seat before we hear from Mr. Putzel. Michael Putzel is a distinguished American journalist who covered the war in Vietnam, Cambodia, and Laos for 2.5 years as a war correspondent for the Associated Press. From the Civil Rights Movement and the Watergate scandal that brought down Richard Nixon, to the White House under Jimmy Carter, Ronald Reagan, and Bill Clinton, and the collapse of Soviet communism from Moscow, he reported many of the biggest news stories of his generation. His recent work, The Price They Paid, The Enduring Wounds of War, is the product of his search for Vietnam War's less visible victims. While that search took him around the country and around the world, he found some of his answers here in Orange. Please join me in welcoming Mr. Michael Putzel.
Thank you so much. I have to say, I am completely something of a logistical nightmare because of all the planes from Washington were canceled yesterday, and I had to take the train, and I missed the train because the taxi had to pick up two other people before I got there, and I finally arrived and learned that the event tomorrow had been canceled because of school tomorrow, and I thought, well, what's it going to be like in Norwich, you know? It couldn't be better, I can tell you that. The people I worked with here to get this story, it was, I guess I should be honest, it was really an accident. I called a guy, first of all, for those of you who haven't had an opportunity to read the book, you've heard a little bit about it tonight, but it started out as a book about this legendary Air Cavalry commander who was twice nominated for the Medal of Honor. He actually received the Distinguished Service Cross and the Silver Star, the second two highest awards for valor in combat, endless other medals. And a lot of it was because he was determined never to leave anyone behind. And his men would follow him anywhere, and they did. Into the most intensive helicopter combat ever, not just Vietnam. And it started out as a story about this guy as a leader, because I could never understand all these other people I covered who had much more vaunted titles, didn't measure up in the leadership that he had. And it wasn't until his funeral 7 years ago at Arlington that I discovered the other Jim Noonan. That was the guy I knew in Vietnam. I met him, flew with him, and it was at his funeral that I learned that when he had come home from the war, he was a different person. And in trying to understand how the man who would never leave anyone behind came home and walked out on two sons, 15 and 17 years old, and never spoke to those boys again for the rest of his life. I couldn't put those two things into one body. And my search took me to his first family, his second family, other members of his, the people he'd grown up with, and to the people who had flown for him and still worshipped him, and do to this day for what he did for them and brought them home. But as I researched that, I began to get echoes that actually these guys I was talking to had some problems of their own. And as I dug a little bit and began to ask the simple question, well, how are you doing? I found that all of them, almost to a man, have had dreadful problems since they came home from Vietnam, since they come home from this unbelievably intensive combat that they endured. And I began to realize that the story wasn't just about Jim Miller. It was about what happened. It was the enduring wounds of war, sometimes physical. Many of you I know, you talked about Agent Orange. It's not just Agent Orange, but that's one of the big ones. There are so many physical things that can be diagnosed and we know about and that don't go away. And then there are the things that are less visible but are no less enduring, no less serious, no less daunting for those who have to deal with them. And so I called a guy in the process to ask, so how did this unit, C Troop, 2nd and 17th Air Cavalry, 101st Airborne Division, how did they get their name, the Condors? Who called them? Somebody gave me a name, I called him up, he turned out to have been the first Condor, the first commander of C Troop, who had formed the troop before Vietnam and then took it to Vietnam. And I asked him, and he started to tell me this story that led to the letter he wrote to a four-year-old boy, and how that letter came back to him 30 years later, and completely by surprise. He was long out of the Army. He was teaching at a small college in Wisconsin, and somebody wanted to go to Vietnam to see where his father had died, and an intermediary had tracked this guy down and said, you know, maybe you could help him. When he saw that letter on his computer screen, first time in 30 years, he froze. He could not get out of his chair for hours. And when he finally did, he managed to get to the president of college, who was a retired Navy admiral and psychiatrist, fortunately, who recognized what was happening to him and began the process of trying to help him through. But when I learned that story from him, I wanted, of course, to see the letter and find out who this kid was, whatever happened to him. And that's what led me to, first of all, Roberta, many of you know, who was the woman standing at the door when they came to say that Robert Howard had been killed in Vietnam, and Robert II was not old enough to receive this news, although he does have a bit of a memory when he came to the door. And as many of you know who dealt with her, Roberta is her own force of nature. And she laid out some of the story for me, put me in touch with Robert, and I realized that I had missed a whole other section that I had to write about, which was, it wasn't just the commander, it wasn't just the people who flew for him, it wasn't just their immediate families. This went on to another generation, and still does. We're not at the end of it. But it was a recognition for me that the story continues to unfold and continues to hurt people for things that they have never done and could never have even known about. But it also is an inspiring story to me because Robert Howard II, who grew up bitter and angry at his father for not coming home, and the people who knew his father and loved his father and talked about him all the time, and Robert felt cheated that he didn't have that pleasure. And yet, he came to terms with the problems he had. He learned that there were other people like him, sons and daughters, as many of you know, the organization of the children of Vietnam veterans who didn't come home. And they helped Robert through his troubles. And now, using the book and using his own experience, he now goes around and talks to people who are struggling with those same issues. And it's not just Vietnam. Of course, Vietnam was special to those of us who are old enough to remember it and know about the particular difficulties of coming home at that time under those circumstances. But it's still going on. The people lost in Iraq and Afghanistan and other places that we sometimes don't even know about are no less affected, and their families are no less affected by what is happening to their heroes. And so I thank Robert and Roberta, and of course the Robert Howard I didn't know, for providing this part of the story and helping me understand what this is all about and why we have to keep telling the story and spreading the word. And thank you so much for all of you. I'm going to go.
Stay here. There's this walled off section downstairs if you'd like to go downstairs. The important thing is at halftime we're going to grab everyone and we're going to bring them down on the floor for the halftime ceremony. So feel free to mingle, stay here and mingle. If you want to go downstairs, we have students that will show you the way downstairs. They know where the gym is. Y'all good? All right, they know where the gym is. Library, I'm not sure the gym. If you'd like to go down, they'll help you. They'll show you the way down and we'll stay here and mingle. We'll have a good time. So thank you.
Thanks, John. You're listening to Sunday Special on Heritage Information Radio. And now, it's halftime down on the gym floor. A special section in the bleachers had been roped off for local veterans, dignitaries, members of the media, and others participating in the evening's special event. Let's listen to the Honor and Remember flag presentation. After I mentioned parenthetically that I'm pretty sure Robert Howard Jr. was the only person in the state of Connecticut that didn't know what was about to take place.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please. It's now time to start our special presentation. And it's my honor to introduce to you from Frontier Communications, Ms. Jennifer Brown.
Thank you. Our veterans and why we're here this evening. Frontier has a long-standing corporate commitment to our veterans. They were here there for us, and we're proud to be here for them now. 13% of Frontier's workforce is currently made up of veterans and military spouses who work throughout our company in the fields, IT, engineering, field operations, sales, and contact centers. We're part of the 100,000 Job Missions, a nationwide initiative that encourages large corporations to hire 100,000 transitioning service members or veterans by 2020. Frontier was named a 2014 and 2015 Most Valuable Employer for Military by CivilianJobs.com. We've sponsored and presented over 100 honor and remember flags across the United States and many of them here in Connecticut. Frontier is a 100% U.S.-based company. Frontier announced the first of three $50,000 donations to the Connecticut Department of Veteran Affairs in support of their pilot program designed to provide veterans with easy online access to their health benefits. Now, why are we here? I have a team of two call centers in the state of Connecticut, one in New London and one in New Haven. And our team is so passionate about our veteran programs and about all of you that we wanted to do something special. So our team took money out of their own pockets and raised money to present to you today, or one of you today, a special flag.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's now my honor to introduce to you Mr. Kevin Gross, retired U.S. Navy ICCSS, Director and Chaplain of Honor and Remember Connecticut. Please join me in welcoming Mr. Gross for the special presentation.
Thank you. If I could have the family come join us over here. Michael? For over three centuries now, our country has been asking its finest men and women to go in harm's way. And while we know and we look and we realize and we see pictures of our men and women that go, those men and women are sisters, brothers, mothers, fathers, daughters, sons, cousins, nephews. It's been written and said that you only need to go three people away from any person who has ever served, and you will meet somebody in their family with less than three generations or three people away. We in Connecticut Honor and Remember want to take the time, want to take the opportunity to honor and remember every fallen hero in our nation and every family of those fallen heroes. If I could have the honor and remember flag, please. In over 200 years of our nation's history, we have never embraced a national symbol that specifically recognizes the ultimate sacrifice of our military men and women, bringing tribute to every service member who ever lost their life in the line of duty. The Honor and Remember flag was created for that purpose. It is the mission of Honor and Remember to establish and promote this national symbol of appreciation through state and national legislation and broad public awareness. George Lutz began his mission to honor and remember those who have given their lives for our freedom following his son's death, Army Specialist George Anthony Lutz II, Tony, was killed on December 29, 2005 while on patrol in Fallujah, Iraq. In an attempt to reach out to other families and show them that their loved ones' sacrifices were not in vain, and to ensure that the nation will never forget, George founded Honor and Remember Incorporated. The Honor and Remember flag was conceived to produce a universally recognized symbol that specifically acknowledges the American servicemen and women who never made it home. Founded in 2008, Honor and Remember has since been accepted and endorsed by military organizations across the United States, and 21 states currently have it as their state military recognition flag. The red and white field represents the blood spilled and the purity of the sacrifice. The offset blue star represents active military service. This symbol originated with World War I. The gold star overlaying the blue star signifies the highest or ultimate sacrifice of a warrior who will not return home. The folded flag signifies the final tribute of a grateful nation to the family of the lost loved one. The flame is an eternal reminder of the spirit that has departed this life, yet burns on in the memory of all who knew, loved, and remembers. we will never forget. The words "I will remember" signify that we will always honor our hero's sacrifice and we'll remember them individually by name. We're here tonight to pay honor to a former NFA graduate, a father, and a hero, Robert Howard. The journey started when I read a newspaper article in Saw a Family, and it was about a book, Wounds They Endure. And I reached out to the family, and I told them that it is our honor to produce Honor and Remember Flags and to give them to the families of our fallen heroes. And then I read the book, and I couldn't be happier. I met Robert tonight for the first time. And I embraced him like I knew him, and he looked at me kind of funny. He doesn't know what it is yet to be famous, and everybody knows you, and he doesn't know anybody. He'll just have to get used to it. But we wanted to take this opportunity to present this flag tonight. If I could have the memorial certificate, please. This Honor and Remember flag is presented with eternal gratitude and respect in honor of Sergeant Robert L. Howard. With this flag, we honor this patriot's unwavering dedication and remember their selfless sacrifice. By displaying this symbol collectively as a nation, we humbly recognize the enormity of your loss and respectfully say thank you. This memorial page. All of our fallen heroes and those who have served are on this page. And we have friends that are endeavoring to add all of those who have served to this page, so there'll be an eternal remembrance of those who served our country. Robert Lewis Howard, branch of service, United States Army, rank sergeant, hometown, Norwich, Connecticut. Honored by a grateful American. Service activities. Served in Vietnam with the Arrow Rifle Platoon, Troop C, 2nd Squadron, 17th Cavalry Regiment, 101st Airborne Division. As an infantryman in the... You're going to have to help me with this one, Michael.
210 Province, South Vietnam.
Thank you. Awarded the Purple Heart, National Service Defense Medal. Vietnam Service Medal with one Bronze Service Star, Vietnam Gallantry Cross Unit Citation, Vietnam Civil Actions Unit Citation, Republic of Vietnam Campaign Medal, and Combat Infantry VIN Badge. Thank you, sir, for your service. We would now like to present the flag to the family.
Robert, we do know about your father's sacrifice, and we remember that. But we also know that the enduring wounds of war extend to the families of those who didn't come back. And it is a great honor for me to be able to present this to someone who has lived through the sacrifice himself and is now inspiring others to overcome their enduring wounds and go on as they must. Thank you.
Some of you don't know that Michael was there. He was embedded. He knows the true story, and he's working to get it out. Michael, we'd like to present you with with your friend. Thank you, everyone.
Ladies and gentlemen, again, a nice round of applause for Emily and all of our Vietnam veterans. Ladies and gentlemen, following the ceremony, the distinguished author, Mr. Michael Putzel, will be available in the atrium, which is out where you entered the gymnasium tonight, for a book signing of his novel, Honoring Vietnam Veterans, The Price They Paid, Enduring Wounds of War. Thank you.
You're listening to Sunday Special on Heritage Information Radio, the weekly program where almost anything can and very often does happen. Our program continues, but first, Heritage Information Radio is proud to partner with the Norwich Area Salvation Army to help where it's needed the most. When you think of the Salvation Army, you probably think of those bell ringers at Christmas time in the shopping malls and the bright red kettles. You probably think of the homeless and how the Salvation Army works diligently every day of the year to provide food and clothing for the indigent. But the truth is, the Salvation Army is even more, offering mentoring for youth, help for those suffering from addictions to alcohol and drugs, providing shelter and resources to the communities they serve in times of natural disaster, giving a hand up, not a hand out. Heritage Information Radio has pledged to raise $1,700 to help the Norwich Area Salvation Army, still recovering from a devastating fire at their downtown headquarters last year. We hope you'll help by visiting our website, www.am1700.org. Now, down near the bottom of the page, you'll see where it says Proud Partners. Click on the Salvation Army link and make a donation today. Be as generous as you can. After all, it just might be your turn. Heritage Information Radio partnering with the Norwich Area Salvation Army because lives matter. And now, my exclusive interview with author and world-acclaimed journalist Michael Putzel about The Price They Paid, The Enduring Wounds of War. Michael Putzel, I want to personally welcome you to Norwich. Thanks for coming up here under somewhat less than ideal meteorological circumstances.
Well, thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed the train ride that we provided for you.
It was long, but it was nice, and we stayed ahead of the weather, so I was so very far, glad to get here.
We'll see how long that lasts. I don't know if you've looked out the window, but there's stuff coming out of the sky.
Yes,
so
it is.
You may be with us a while.
It could be.
So thrilled to have you, and really, last night's event at Norwich Free Academy was remarkable. I would like to have heard you speak even longer. Time was short. I want to talk to you a little bit about your experience with the book you've written, The Price They Pay, The Enduring Wounds of War. First of all, before I get into that, how much time did you spend with the Condors?
Oh, well,
several missions, right?
Yes, my first encounter, and I don't know, this is not in the book, so maybe I should just say this and explain how I happened to come in contact with them. I was covering an operation in which the Allied forces, that is, the South Vietnamese and the Americans, staged the last real serious offensive late in the war. It was February of 1971. And they attempted to invade Laos and cut the Ho Chi Minh Trail, which was the main supply route for the North Vietnamese, bringing their troops and supplies down into the south where the war was going on. And on February 10th, a helicopter was shot down carrying four Western photographers. one of whom was a very dear friend and mentor of mine. Another photographer who was a South Vietnamese Army photographer. A couple of high-ranking South Vietnamese officers and the crew of the helicopter. It was, of course, a big story. It was also, personally, a huge shock for me, covering the operation, to have my friends and colleagues lost in it. And I heard from somewhere that an American Army officer named Newman had witnessed the shootdown. And I went to find him with the idea that I could ask whether there was any chance there were survivors on the ground down there in Laos. And his headquarters at that time were at Khe Sanh. And so I went there, and you never knew when you walked into a unit's area of operations whether they were going to throw you out for losing the war, which a lot of people felt was the press's fault, or whether they were going to welcome you and say, all my men are heroes, and I want you to do a story on every one. You just didn't know. So yeah. I walked in, and out he comes. He was short in stature. He walked with a limp from an earlier wound he had received. His hair was thinning, which I have a special sympathy for. And
so we all.
And there was nothing that wrote great leader across this man's forehead. But I told him what I had heard, and I asked him if there was any chance. I asked him if it was true that he had witnessed this shootdown. And he nodded. And I said, is there any chance there were any survivors? And he shook his head a little bit. And then he cocked his head to one side with a rather puckish grin on his face. And he said, in his Georgia accent, you want to go see? And so we piled onto his command helicopter and flew out over Laos. To see what turned out to be just a burn spot in the ground. And it was quite clear there was no chance anyone had survived that awful crash. And that was my introduction to Charlie Troop. And having got the introduction and having flown with the old man, as they called him, as they always call Army unit commanders, I had a certain cred with the men who flew for him. And so I got to fly other operations with them. And after that operation was over, I went back to see them when they'd gone back to their regular headquarters at Phu Bai, which is near Hue, the imperial capital of Vietnam. And they were flying out into the A Sha Valley, which is one of the notoriously difficult areas, always well defended by the North Vietnamese. And I flew with them there. And by that time, Most of the units in Vietnam were standing down. The American units were standing down. Nixon was trying to pull them out as fast as he could before the his reelection campaign in 1972. And nobody wanted to be the last man killed in Vietnam. Morale was awful. There was a lot of drug use. There was fragging of officers and non-commissioned officers. So I went to see how that affected Charlie Troop, and I found them very much the same as they had been when I met them during that first operation. They were still doing their jobs. They were still, you know, meeting at the officers' club at night or the enlisted men's club and partying and talking about how, you know, singing their songs and just going about their business. So I wrote about them there again as well and stayed in touch with them for years after that.
So you had a few encounters with them under a number of different circumstances in the theater of operation as well as in the club on base. You were able to see them from a number of angles and get to know them fairly well.
I did get to know a few of them. So when I came back to this story years later when Major Newman died and was buried at Arlington, I did know several of the people who came from far and wide to say goodbye to him. And you could always tell them, because even as they had grown old like the rest of us, and gray hair and some of them rather paunchy, they still wore their black Stetson cavalry hats that they were so proud of for having earned in Vietnam.
How many guys are we talking about here?
Well, Newman had command over probably 350 people altogether. A lot of us were people who were in an attached maintenance unit. They weren't they weren't cavalry per se. He had three troops. He was one of three troops of air cavalry that the 101st had, and there were probably I'd say maybe 30 people who were really around him all the time, people who flew with him specifically, flew in the helicopters, either his or those carrying out the missions. The pilots were all either warrant officers or commissioned officers. The crew were enlisted men, and there was a crew chief and a door gunner on each of the regular Hueys that they moved people around in. And then there was a small infantry platoon as well. So I guess we're talking, I probably, of the people in the book, and to get to that, I've probably talked to 30 or 40 people over the course of the story. Those are the people closest to Newman.
So when you went back years later, as you talked about last night at NFA, to learn what had happened in the subsequent years to these men, were you surprised at what you found out?
I was shocked. I was shocked at what I found out, how pervasive it was, and I was shocked that I hadn't even considered that when I started on this project. The project, when it began, was from the day of that funeral, which was February 18th, 2009. I learned at that funeral that Jim Newman, Major Newman, who was a legend because he would never leave anyone behind in Vietnam, had been highly decorated for that and worshipped by his men. And at the funeral, I learned that he came home from the war, walked out on his wife, who had been his high school sweetheart, and left two teenage sons, one 15, one 17, behind. And he never spoke to those boys again for the rest of his life. I couldn't imagine how two such different people could have existed in the same body. What was it that changed him? What was it that enabled that to happen? And the only answer that first family had was, and they said it over and over, it was like a mantra, Vietnam changed him. And so I set out to try to understand how Vietnam changed him and what became of him. And in talking to all these people who flew for him, I was always saying, well, what was it about Newman that was so special? Why did you like him so much? What was his leadership, and how was it different from other people you served under? And I didn't realize until well into that exercise, really probably a couple of years after the funeral, I began to hear murmurs and echoes that things weren't so great with these guys either. And so I started to ask them about themselves. And these are not people who are used to speaking about themselves. And they never talk about the war to their families, to their friends, because they know nobody would understand. And and so often they just bottle it up. And when I began to say, so how are you doing? They would tell me. And it would be, in many cases, it would just come pouring out, the stories that they had told about Newman. But then the stories about themselves, about when they came home and what happened to them. And I realized that the book had taken a very different turn, because it wasn't a book about Newman. It was a book about the whole unit and what happens to men, and now women, but of course in Vietnam it was only men, who flew through these incredibly intensive combat situations and how that changed them and affected them for the rest of their lives.
And it seems to me that when you came in contact with Robert Howard Jr., that changed the direction of the book to a degree. Added to it, certainly, but changed maybe where your focus was.
It added a whole new dimension to the book, because at that point, I was still talking to and about the troops themselves and how they were affected. And in some cases, I learned that their families, of course, were affected, because those who had PTSD or who had breakdowns after the war or physical wounds that never healed properly or that came back on them, those were all pretty much contained in what happened to these men and their families. It was a sheer coincidence, really, and what I now consider a great break of good luck, that I went to answer a simple question. I went looking for this unit, C Troop, 2nd of the 17th Air Cavalry, 101st Airborne Division, had a nickname. They called themselves the Condors. It was unofficial. They wore a patch. They were very proud of that, and they called each other Condors. And I didn't know where the name had come from. And so I asked around and found the first commander of the Condors, who turned out to be the guy who knew, and his name was Bill Zirt. And he had been also a commander of C Troop. He'd taken it to Vietnam. He was long retired from the Army and was teaching college out in Wisconsin. And someone sent him a letter that he had written to a four-year-old boy. That four-year-old boy, of course, was Robert Howard II. And he had written this letter, what we call a regret to inform letter, because Robert Howard II's father, Robert Howard, from Norwich Free Academy, well-known star athlete, had been killed fighting for C Troop. And Robert Howard II was listed as the next of kin. And so Bill Zirt didn't have anybody else to write the letter to, and he wrote it to him. And years later, when Robert Howard II was trying to pull himself together and get over his own anger and bitterness and drug use and the terrible price that he paid for having grown up without a father and feeling bitter and lonely about that, Robert Howard II wanted to go to Vietnam and see where his father was killed. And he had asked a group to help him do that. And someone had located Bill Zirt through his West Point alumni connections and sent Zirt the letter that he had written and asking if Zirt could give him the specifics of where the shooting occurred that had killed Robert Howard. And when Zirt saw that message, that letter that he had written appear on his computer screen, sent as an attachment, he simply froze, couldn't get out of his chair, couldn't move, couldn't get it off his screen, couldn't get it out of his mind. And he had a total breakdown, which stunned him, because he never thought that he had PTSD. He didn't think that he was abnormally affected. He thought he'd handled himself pretty well. So he described those conditions to me and how he had struggled to recover from that flashback that brought him down. And the next thing for me was, well, whatever happened to Robert Howard II? And I went looking for him, and I found Roberta Howard, who was a force of nature in her own right, as you well know. And Robert and I met at the Vietnam Wall, and I realized then that this war, these enduring wounds, had visited themselves on yet another generation, and that those wounds don't go away, they don't end with the soldiers or their immediate families, but they continue. And that's what Robert Howard II represents to me, and why he's in the book and why it tells that story.
So it's the price that they paid, but it's also the price that is continuing to be paid by their children and their children's children.
That's absolutely true. And it was learning that that, again, added another layer, another dimension to the book that I had not anticipated. I think you never know when you start to report a story where it's going to take you. But this took me on a very circuitous journey.
You've covered a lot of different stories. This certainly is somewhat different, not only as a story, but the fact that you decided to go back and write about it later and invest yourself personally in it, which you're doing now. So I want to ask you, how has this book affected you? Which I suppose sounds like a strange thing to ask the author. But the work that you have put forth, the book, at some point becomes a living thing, an entity of its own. How has it impacted you or continues to affect you now?
That's a fascinating question, Kevin. And I have to say, I have not been asked that question before. I've answered an awful lot of questions about the book. And I haven't reflected a great deal about it. However, I would like to answer it in a couple of ways. The first is that I was not exempt from flashbacks. I don't believe that I ever suffered PTSD in the way that the troops, the C Troop aircav guys did. I did see my share of combat as a correspondent. And of course, I was not a combatant. I didn't carry arms. I depended on others to provide for my safety. And I nonetheless had some experiences that are difficult to reflect on. But when I came back from the war, I had a similar experience to them in that nobody wanted to talk about Vietnam. I'd just been through the most incredible experience of my life, covering the biggest story in the world, as I saw it, and nobody wanted to ask. Everybody felt uncomfortable. That is in some ways similar to what happened to a lot of these guys. In one way, I was very fortunate. Just a very few short months after I got back and was assigned to the Washington Bureau, the Watergate scandal erupted, and the AP was throwing all the bodies at it that it could to try to catch up on that story and follow it where it led. And I buried myself in Watergate for about 18 months, every day, many hours a day. And it sort of led me away from the war. I didn't have time to reflect. Sit around feeling sorry for myself because people didn't ask me about it. I just went on, and I think that was ideal therapy in my particular case. The other thing is, you mentioned that this is a very difficult, very different sort of writing for me, because it's true, I had spent most of my career writing on very tight deadlines. The AP was, you know, a deadline every minute. Mm-hmm. And we were constantly updating our stuff and racing for telephones and such. And then later with the Boston Globe, it was a daily newspaper. And there weren't quite as many deadlines, but they were very hard deadlines, and you had to meet them. And every day you got up and you had a new day. With this book, it was really the antithesis of that. I got up every day, and I finally learned that that I had to leave the night before with an unfinished sentence on my screen, or I'd come in the next day with a blank screen and not know where to start. It went on day after day, year after year. which certainly was not what I expected. And as a result, how could it help but change me too? And it made me much more reflective, sensitive to what I had missed all that time, and grateful that the men of C Troop opened up to me and told me this story that I think is so vital for people to understand, because when they send people to war, it is not just for a tour of duty and to come back, and they go on to something else. That's not the way it works. It goes on and on.
You never completely come home from war. Michael Putzel, this has been great to visit with you. Go ahead. I want to give you as much time as you want. We've got all the time in the world. You didn't have a lot of time to speak last night at NFA.
Well, I'm grateful for this time, but I do feel like I'm hogging the microphone.
You're not, no, no such thing. Can't be done. Besides, it's your job.
But you asked, you know, how it affected me.
And yeah, exactly.
I think the way it affected me was it taught me that we as reporters, we don't know what we're getting into when we start on a story. Sometimes we don't have time to find out before we've written it and gone on to the next thing. In this case, I just kept learning, and I still do. Last night, at NFA, seeing all the people gathered there at the last minute, because the event was supposed to be scheduled for Saturday morning and it was canceled because of the storm, and they came in anyway early. They just came to gather and talk about their own feelings and what the book has done for this community. And I realized that in this community, at least, it has had a tremendous impact in teaching people the empathy they should feel for not just the veterans, certainly the veterans, but not just the veterans, but for all of those who are still enduring these wounds. And it was so heartening for me to see a community focused on those things that elsewhere we often think are forgotten.
Well, you've written the book in a certain kind of candor that is refreshing, as a number of people have pointed out. And I tell you, the phrase that keeps going through my mind is the one that's quoted on your website, michaelputzel.com, Bob Schieffer from CBS News, who said, "This is a story that needs to be told." I don't know if there's a more flattering commentary on a book anywhere. It is a story with great personal depth to it, and you don't seem to have, as someone said, attempted to mask the truth. And it's about a lot more than just bombs blowing up and politics and Washington. It's about people and their lives. And I imagine you hope that some of the takeaway from the book will be to make a better world, that someday someone referred to last night, a time when men no longer have to go to war. I don't know if there'll ever be such a day, but it would be inspiring to hope that if that day comes, that your work might be part of that.
Well, if that's true, it would, of course, be more gratifying than anything else I could ever do. like you, I can't foresee the day when we put an end to war. Of course, I wish that time would come, and maybe it will. Maybe human beings do get a little bit better in each generation, a little bit more sensitive, a little bit more anxious to find peace rather than fight. In this particular atmosphere we're seeing today with with ISIS. And,
well, it seems to be going the other way, doesn't it?
It's hard to imagine that we're making progress
exactly.
as human beings, but we can continue to hope and have faith that you know, the human animal does learn from experience and get better for that. In the meantime, I think that if the book, as Bob Schieffer said, a story that needs to be told, and you probably know Bob was also in Vietnam.
Yes.
We weren't there at the same time, but it is a story that needs to be told, and I hope at the levels where leaders who send men and women off to war understand better what they're asking of those people and what the true cost is going to be. And it's not just the cost of the bullets and the guns and the transportation to get them there and patching up their wounds after they get hurt. It goes on so much longer, and it's so much bigger for those people and for their communities.
What's on the drawing board now? What are you working on next?
Pushing this book.
You're doing an awesome job of it.
At the end of the book, Kevin, in the acknowledgments, the last person I acknowledged, of course, was my wife, Anne, who is a writer herself and has produced 4 biographies. I think in the aggregate, probably in less time than it took me to write one. My promise to her was, when this was done, there would be time to go sailing.
And Chesapeake Bay?
No, we prefer Maine, frankly.
Yeah, yeah. Lobster's and better.
The lobster's better. The oysters are better. And the wind is better in the summer.
Yeah.
We started on that project last summer. We went sailing several times, and I do hope to keep that part of my life in some perspective from now on, and not tunnel in as I did on this book and come out of a cave 6 years later.
That's important. You got to keep the balance.
Exactly.
Keep sharing with us what you've learned. Thanks for sharing the book with us.
I would add one more thing too, just since you did ask about what's next. And you suggested this yourself, that I have done more than just write, that I've been affected because I care about the people who are touched by this. And one of the things I'm trying to do is find ways that the book can help those who are still out there, still suffering, often in silence, and sometimes dangerously. We all know the terrible suicide rates of veterans, and to try to use the book in a way that it calls attention to these people, helps them realize that they're not alone, that there is help, and that one day they too can benefit. And I hope that the book will serve that purpose, and that I'm not just selling books by being out there promoting it.
You've been very generous with your time. I assume you have a train to catch, or a bus, or a dog sled, or something here.
We're going to see whether or not we can get up the road.
I do hope you'll come back and see us again soon, and we'll have a chance to talk further with you.
Well, I hope so, too, and thank you very much. Thanks for the airtime, and I wish you all the best. I know that your heart is certainly in the right place and has been... You've been very helpful to Robert in his getting his message out.
To say that Robert is a special dude would be an understatement. He's really taken the bull by the horns, and I think he's out there working his own mission, and he's doing his part to help these guys and gals, too.
Which is so inspiring.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to come to Norwich and see this community, because they still care about the Howard family and all the people in it, and recognize that, you know, he is He is now, as he puts it, I don't use the term giving back, but he does. He is now giving back by helping those who, like him, have lost parents in the war, that, you know, they need to find their own path to get out of the that terrible isolation that they feel.
Michael Putzel's book, The Price They Paid, The Enduring Wounds of War, is available through Amazon.com and can be ordered by fine booksellers everywhere. Michael Putzel's sponsors for this weekend's events included the Norwich Free Academy, T-Mobile, the Spa at Norwich Inn, the Norwich Lions Club, the Courtyard by Marriott Norwich, and the Veterans of Foreign Wars, post number 9452, Preston, Connecticut. For Heritage Information Radio, I'm Kevin Harkins.